Almost 200 years ago, a series of unique experiments kicked off in the United States. People formed communities in states all over the country trying to create real-life utopias where people lived in harmony with nature, with God, or with each other. Famous communities included New Harmony in Indiana, the Shaker Village in Pleasant Hill, Kentucky, and the anarchist villages in Ohio and Long Island.
Our next guest explored the history of those communities, and then he got in a truck, and he went on a 2,300-mile tour of the historic sites. He says we can learn a lot about our nation from these 19th-century utopias. Author Eric Reese joins us now. His new book is called Utopia Drive, A Road Trip Through America's Most Radical Idea. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Eric, what led you to take this road trip to the sites of these utopian communities from a couple centuries ago?
I think it was just, I've been for many years just really impressed by just the radical idealism that these visionaries embodied. And so I've been collecting documentation and archives about these different communities for about two decades. And I think I just sort of hit this point a couple years ago where I thought, you know, we have these such seemingly insurmountable problems of income inequality and environmental problems that I just thought, you know, it's time to sort of embrace something optimistic and sort of solution-focused.
And you write that some of these settlements were motivated by religion, some for secular reasons, some by a early forming socialist ideology, a lot of them a combination, all of the above. Do you see a common theme that runs through all of them?
Yeah, there's definitely, you see a lot of the same things. I mean, you certainly see a kind of, you know, across-the-board egalitarianism that, you know, transcended racial lines and gender lines. You really see just a lot of self-sufficiency within the communities. They were nonviolent. They were non-exploitive. They all had their own alternative economic systems. They of course, emphasized sharing to a huge degree. So even the ones that were religious sort of based that on the passage in the book of Acts that says the first Christians, you know, shared all things in common. And then the ones that were secular sort of went back to these early roots of socialism that Robert Owen brought to the country. So they came at it from very different ways, but when they actually got together, as they sometimes did, they found that they had a whole lot in common.
Now, as you went on this tour, and you just hit kind of the eastern half of the country on this, but what kind of things can we still see from their communities?
Well, the Shakers at Pleasant Hill, they've really preserved the community in ways that are, you know, you look at the way the community is laid out and you realize that, you know, people move from work to church to pleasure to dancing to eating, you know, all within sort of a 10-minute walk. So, you know, these kinds of planned communities that we're seeing pop up, you know, in the country today, you know, they very much sort of believe in that kind of approach. And then I just, you know, you would see just sometimes it was just, you know, there was just kind of the ruins of a community that was left behind. But I sort of was interpreting these ruins as these dream images, these images of redemption, of things that we could still sort of salvage and use as inspirations in a way, of, you know, to think about the future.
Talking to author Eric Reese about his new book. It's called Utopia Drive, A Road Trip Through America's Most Radical Idea, looking at these utopian communities, a lot of them in the early to mid-1800s. This era kind of ended, you write, Eric, with the outbreak of the Civil War, leading up to the Civil War era. Why did this great flowering, and there were a lot of these communities, you write, why did this experiment kind of taper off, come to an end for a while?
I think the story of the Civil War was just such a larger myth-making story, the idea that, you know, we need to unite this nation. We don't need to be, you know, splintering off into a thousand different little communities. I think that proved to be such a powerful narrative that, you know, the country really wanted to embrace that. And then you had the industrialism that the Civil War brought on. And so, for instance, the seed business that the Shakers had started, you know, that sort of went out of business. And so I think a lot of these sort of decentralized economies found it harder and harder to compete in the post Civil War world.
Eric, if you'll excuse me for getting into the racier side of things here, the attitudes towards sex in these communities, they really ran the gamut. You mentioned the Shaker village. No sex at all. They did not want to have children. They adopted children, as I understand it, to try to keep alive. On the other end, there were some that advocated free love, ending, they viewed marriage, I think, as a kind of property. They didn't want property.
Right.
So anything went, I guess. Talk about that range of attitudes.
Well, yeah, I was trying to explain to my wife, you know, the range of these things, and her comment was, so if a woman founds the community, they don't have any sex, and if a man founds the community, they have all the sex they want. So, I mean, it definitely runs the gamut. My mother Ann Lee, who started the Shakers, she had come out of a crushing marriage, and she saw marriage as this way of oppressing women. The New Harmony people felt the same way. They felt like, you know, when a woman in Indiana got married, she, you know, basically lost her rights as a citizen or as a property holder. And then up in Oneida, New York, they invented this sort of loose interpretation of the Bible to say that, you know, basically there was no sin in the world, and so because of the second coming, and therefore you can basically do what you want in the sexual arena.
Now, all of these utopian communities pretty much ended for one reason or another, and I think it'd be easy to look back and call them failures. I think other people have. You don't. You see them as successes in the sense that they helped shape what happened later in America, or even at the time. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's a big myth that they were failures, but the Shakers lasted here in Kentucky for 100 years. The Oneidans, they lasted for 50 years, and then they just turned into a joint stock company that, of course, is famous for their silverware. So I think we as a country, we want to think that they failed because that's a way of reinforcing the status quo. But then if you look back and you think, you know, these people had some really radical ideas about how to organize life in America in a way that's, you know, very different from the way it is now, that, you know, you can look back and say, well, wait a minute, you know, given the financial collapse of 2008, you know, maybe we shouldn't be so quick to reject these ideas. Maybe there's things here that we could salvage and use and be inspired by.
And you say you're taking a road trip through America's most radical idea. What exactly was the radical idea? Is it that we, as Americans, we can build things, we can make our communities better in ways that the old world couldn't?
I think so. I think it's the idea that it doesn't have to. We don't. I think we as Americans, you know, we sort of, there's an inevitability to the way, you know, we look at the world and we think, well, this is the way it is, so this is the way it just, you know, is going to be. And they looked at the world, especially after the panic of 1837, and they said, no, it doesn't have to be this way. We can radically reorganize communities so that there's no racism, there's no sexism, there's no economic inequality, there's no violence. And they did it, and a lot of very different ways they were successful.
Eric, this is a history book in a way, and in a way you're not writing a history book. Can you talk about what we can learn from this world of intentional communities, utopian communities, now in 2016?
I was trying to, tell this intellectual history of this movement, and then I was also trying to bring it into the present and say, you know, these communities, they represent models that we can embrace, and that's why I looked at some contemporary examples, like, for instance, communities in Massachusetts where they've started using their own local currency as a way to sort of, you know, circumvent the financial system. And so I think there's a lot of things like that you can draw from the 19th century utopian communities, and you can look at the ones that are still in existence now, and you can look at them and say, wow, you know, these people are, you know, they are completely egalitarian. It's profit sharing, and it's something that still can be a useful way of thinking about what America could be moving forward.
And you quoted, I think it was Milton Friedman saying, you know, part of the job of the economist is to have alternative models so, you know, when what we're doing now goes wrong, we can reach into that toolkit. That's what you see these utopian communities of the past and present as. They're keeping a toolkit alive. So if, you know, consumer society, whatever we want to call it, goes off the rails, we've got other people working on other stuff, other ideas.
That's right. I mean, I don't quote Milton Friedman a lot, but I thought that was incredibly instructive. That idea that you know these blueprints they still exist and they're still relevant.
And Eric, having done the work you've done, the road trip, the research, talking to modern communities like this, would you want to live in something like this? Would you want to start the Reesian community out in the wild somewhere?
Well, I live out in the wild. One of the points I make in my book is that there's a utopia of solidarity and there's a utopia of solitude. And the utopia of solidarity are these great visionary collectivists who come together around these ideas of sharing. And then there's a utopia of solitude, like Henry David Thoreau's the most famous example in this country, of somebody who, you know, tries to create that sort of self-reliance in a very solitary way. So I realized when I visited the contemporary communities that are still going that I probably wouldn't be a great member. I'm a little too introverted and not enough of a joiner, I think, to really belong to a community like that. So I think I realize that I trend a little more towards the utopia of solitude.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Eric Ries. He's the author of the new book, Utopia Drive, A Road Trip Through America's Most Radical Idea.